our first question today is sort of an opening one. We just want to know, why should consumers care about local foods? I'm just sort of going to leave it open to you guys to give us a an overall view of the local food movement in the Great Plains and why we should care.
I think it's important for everybody to know where your food comes from, to appreciate the process that the food goes from the farm to the table. And so I think that's the basis of culture, is food. And so to sum it up, that's what I would say.
The importance of us all working together is because it's building relationships and it's building a resilient food system. I think we've seen a lot of things happening this year as far as weather and other things that have, can't hear me back there, that have influenced where our food is coming from. And if we get to know our farmers and build a relationship with them, we're going to have a pretty secure food system. That's not only going to be food that tastes good, but you're building that relationship that I think is just wonderful. I don't know what other word to use for that. Being able to shake the hand that person has grown that food. And then they, in return, get to see your wonderful response to that, which is almost worth as much as that dollar you're giving them for their food. And it's also helping to revitalize our rural communities. We're seeing a lot more people going back and being able to go back to the farm and go back to rural communities because of consumers wanting local food.
You could spend hours answering that question. I think that there are a myriad of reasons why you should eat local food. And I probably stand at a table every night in the restaurant as the chef and tell somebody one of the 50 reasons you can think of. You can start out with, they make my job easy by giving me such great ingredients to start with because they don't have to travel very far. They care about what they do, so it makes it easy for me to care about it and get it to the customer in a way that shows that you care. There's health benefits, which science may not have proven yet, but nobody can argue it tastes better. I get a head start on the shelf life of everything because I get it within days of it being picked, if even that long. Proteins, dairy, everything else as well. There's flavors you cannot get in a jar. You can't buy a salad dressing that tastes like the ones I make with fresh cheese I just got. There's economic reasons, there's health reasons. It's like religion, you know, pick the reason you want. GMO, the environmental impact. There are so many possible reasons why you should eat local food. And pick the one you like, but in the end, it tastes better.
I think it truly the only thing would be, it'd be easier to talk about why you wouldn't, which I wouldn't understand why you wouldn't if you could.
It's a shorter list.
Yeah. So I think on the farmer end, I don't know, there's that it creates a livelihood, that it creates a personal, in addition to that, personal sovereignty is one thing. We don't talk about it as much from our side of the table, but I think being able to create your own personal economy based on your decisions in your life. I mean, we all have that capability, and we all do it every day, all day long, everything we choose. So in addition to all of those great things, I mean, we touched on the economy, but I think creating our personal sphere and how we're going to create and shape our lives and the lives of those around us and in turn our community. And I think that's becoming more and more a pressing need, much more quickly than we might realize. Not for any political reason or anything specifically, but and we see weather, I mean, crazy weather this year. An awesome season from our perspective, but still really crazy weather that we have to deal with. And I think that's just going to create ever more, better reasons or more pressing reasons, I guess. And I guess personal sovereignty in your personal sphere of choice. So.
Good luck, Bob.
Well, I think you're all answering that by the number of people that are here. See, if we would go back 10 years when we started this in 2004, 2005, and we would have held something like this, there would have been just a handful of people here. So the interest for local food and the interest for eating healthy food has grown to the magnitude as what we're seeing here today. So that you're the answer. You're the reason that we're here, and we're the reason, you know, that you're here. Thank you.
All right, Bob, so that raises a pretty good point. I've seen an explosion in the local food movement in the past, you know, 5-7 years. The number of farmers markets, CSAs, the local food you can find even in normal stores. What does that mean to you guys, this proliferation of local food and just the sheer numbers coming at you? Does that, you know, change your business at all or change your perspective?
In our industry, we started out with a cheese processing facility on the farm from our 60-headed Jersey dairy cows, and we've currently got 700 acres that we produce crops and livestock and vegetables on. And in the last 3 years, the way this has grown, for instance, we're a member of a CSA now. In our part of the state, we're 150 miles out. So farmers markets and those sort of things are a little harder to reach into and gather up the people that are really looking for this food. But we've got involved with CSAs in the eastern part of the state, and one, for instance, has grown from 150 families to 960 families in the last, you know, 3 years. So it's really a progressive, ongoing, growing thing out there. And when it comes to our family in particular, we've got 12 children, and we were actually able to bring two of those children home to help with the production side and the delivery side to get the food where we need it. So it's really important to us. It's improved our family. It's improved our relationships. It's really understanding what we're producing for you, and that you're enjoying what we're producing for you. And that relationship, in my opinion, is about as good as it gets. Thank you.
All right. Does anybody else want to comment on that one?
We don't have to.
No, feel free.
I think that it's not a double-edged sword, but there's such a change, which is great. But then I think also, too, everyone's trying to figure out where they fit. When people started doing pasture poultry, I mean, a whole bunch of, like 20 years ago, a lot of people started doing pasture poultry very quickly. And then the upside is there's lots of it happening, and it really raised the awareness of what was going on. But then people started sorting out, well, maybe that's not my thing, or this guy's doing it a lot better, or somehow he sourced the equipment. So I think some of that still, there's like these little upsurges, and I've seen that happening. We've been almost 20 years, and like Bob said, I mean, we used to, well, it was before the internet, we would, you know, rent the public library, or get a public library room and try and, like, let people know what CSA was, and it was just so slow to get going because there was, you know, some of the media things you can do now didn't happen as quickly. So I've seen that's kind of an exponential thing, and I think the excitement of, like, that it's, I don't know, the excitement that people feel like just being here, or how the exchange that's happening, like Bob said, I think that's only going to continue to benefit everyone. People see opportunities on the field side as well as opportunities on the peripheral, like, you know, maybe food hubs or local food shops, or, you know, all those things are additional opportunities that are just beginning to be added on to just the farm part, I think.
I've been around farmers markets around that for over 30 years, and starting out at the hay market in 85, talk about just a handful of farmers. There was hardly anyone there to come. And the only, I could say, they started out in right after the farm crisis, and the small farm action group said, you know, we have to do something to help save these small family farms. And so that's how the farmers market started down in the Haymarket District. And so, like I said, they contacted a few farmers that said, yeah, we got some extra vegetables, you know, we could probably bring them. I do great cookies and things like that. And so they found a wonderful location that had cover, and that was the Harris Overpass. And so not only was it hard to find, but the only regular customer there were the pigeons. So most of the people spend about an hour waiting for customers to come and then exchanged vegetables for bakery. So in about 1985 then, the city of Lincoln and the Haymarket developers came together to start the Haymarket Farmers Market. And we started that with just, again, probably 12 vendors. And just trying to build awareness, saying to people, you know, you can buy great farm fresh food here, and it is grown right here in Nebraska. That took about 25 years to catch on, and I'm glad that you're here to help support that and showing, you know, that local food can happen. And that's not only happened here in the Haymarket, but that was happening across the Great Plains. It starts very small. The movement has started. It's taken 25 years. But people are saying, we want to know who's growing our food, how they're growing it, and we want to be able to shake their hand and build that relationship between them.
And I just wanted to touch on the relationships. The relationships aren't just with the consumers and the farmers, but the farmers to farmers. As a young and beginning farmer, you know, my relationship with Bob, who's also a dairy farmer, and I'm an aspiring dairy farmer, I can glean information from him, and that helps the movement along, and it's part of this idea of building community, and so I think that's a key asset in this whole movement. So.
So William, have you seen the movement grow across Nebraska since you're the executive director of the NSAS? Have you seen it in a far away from metro areas like Lincoln, Omaha? Is it?
Oh yeah, definitely, and I think Blaine can attest to that too, the farmers markets that have grown, Alliance, Broken Bow, Ord, Greater Nebraska, and not just the farmers markets, but there's CSAs. There's I'm not sure what city he's in, maybe Valentine. He has a CSA with about 60 shareholders, and so that's the middle of nowhere. And so, well, roundaboutly, but so anyway, so it is growing. It's not just urban Omaha, Lincoln, or Des Moines, or any places like that. And so I definitely, you know, it is statewide. Rural is still, you know, there's still local foods in rural Nebraska and rural Great Plains. So, and there's a lot of culture to be had within food from these rural communities.
As you say, like way back in 1985, there were 12 farmers markets in the state. Now there's close to 90. Yeah. So there are a lot of them out there in rural America and Nebraska.
And there's, I know Blaine spearheaded this, Farmers Market Managers Group or whatever, to provide support for the farmers market statewide. It's not just, again, eastern Nebraska. And so I know Blaine has spearheaded that at By Fresh, By Local.
Great. We have a few different terms, local, sustainable, organic, slow food. Can you talk about how they're related or how they're all different? Like what as a consumer we should know about some of these terms?
Yeah, okay, so that's a great question. So organic, you know, that fits into the organic standards developed by the USDA. You can go to usda.gov and find out more information about that. Slow food, I'm president of the Slow Food Nebraska group as well. Slow food was an international phenomenon that came about as a result of roughly a McDonald's opening up across from the Acropolis. And, you know, it's like that play on culture and, you know, something's wrong there. And so essentially it's getting back to the culture that I keep mentioning culture, but that's key. But food heritage, where your food comes from, appreciating that connection. Many of the events that Slow Food Nebraska puts on bridge the farmer, the consumer, and the chef, and the important cog there in that movement. And so for me, and then sustainability, I should mention that. Sustainability is huge. We look at sustainability as having three main components. Economics, of course, anything needs to be economically viable, but also environmentally aware, you know, what you're putting into your soil, what you're doing with your livestock, all of those components. And then finally, perhaps the most important piece, and I keep coming back to culture because I think it's the most important, is the community and the socially responsible piece. So you're at a farmer's market, you're sitting across from Bob and he's selling you cheese. He's invested in your health, and likewise, you're invested in the health of his farm. It's a CSA model, but to a really, it just got real level. And so then local, I think local's the most important thing when it comes to food. It incorporates all of that, Local isn't distance, like 10 miles, 100 miles. It's relationships. It's, again, the culture. And so that's how we look at it. But then personally, with my wife and I's farm, local is the relationships that you build within your community where you are invested in their health and likewise they're invested in your health.
We're being polite. Okay. I think we need like a little Venn diagram or something up here.
Please, I have to do a little squirrels.
you have to remember, I think we also say local is where and organic is how. So not that they're mutually exclusive. I think you can have both. We're also certified biodynamic at our place. So we at least meet and then exceed, we feel like, organic standards. I think that's really important, and I think, like William said, local can be, you know, it can be 100 miles, or it can be, I mean, I could have a local, I can have Smart Chicken, and that could be 5 miles down the road, but I don't think that's what people are generally speaking to when they're talking about local. So a lot of these things are put out there very casually, and I think it can get confusing also. Again, I think it's personal choice. There's things where our family feels like it's more important to have certified organic or know that's absolutely organic versus local, just because I might actually know what that person's doing and I don't think it's as good as it could be. So again, knowing what someone's practices are is a huge part of that. And they might not be certified and have excellent, you know, personal standards that are like top notch, and that I would, like there's an apple orchard north of Lincoln. She's not certified organic, she's not organic at all, but she's reduced spraying tremendously and is happy to speak with us about that. And so that's important for our family. So those are personal choices that everyone needs to make, but all those spheres come together as far as local and organic. I mean, you can have it all, and I think it should not be forgotten in Nebraska that we have an incredible capability to grow a huge amount of food here. And I don't think people can realize that, even without, you know, a lot of propane and a lot of season extension, there's so much food that can be grown here and is being grown here, and organic food that's being grown here. And, you know, there's lots of row crops even, or popcorn, or, I mean, just tons of food. So if you don't think it's here, it really is, and it's available to all of us. So.
It's coming back. I'm sure. You know, when Ruth and Everett started, they kind of blazed the trail. When Baleen, she was there even before, with the local food movement, the organic movement. We all know we've succeeded when we turn the TV on and the first ad by Walmart is local from fresh from the farm. It's local produced. It's that's not what it is. They're using the momentum that these people and myself have, built up, and they're taking advantage of that. So we know we've been successful. You know, now it's up for the consumer to recognize if it is actually local, if it is actually organic, if it is actually, any of the fresh, buy fresh, or the fresh terminology. It's up to you to determine that. I wish there was an easier way that we could help you do that, other than just looking at us, asking us those questions, and we can answer it. Thank you.
So I guess I'm the new kid on the block, because this is only our third growing season, but we're building a restaurant at the same time. So there's a lot of misnomers, and I'm not sure we want to have government define all of those terms for us anymore. That's not always the best process. And even when they do define it, organic is somewhat defined, but there's still some gray areas. And that's why you know your farmer, so you know your food. If it's important to you that you not have this particular pesticide or a GMO or whatever the thing is that means something to you, you should be able to ask about that. And as the restaurant, as a chef, when I pick things to put on the menu, I get to make that decision for you. So you should ask me what that is, where did it come from, because you're relying on me to find good stuff for you that tastes good, that's healthy for you, because I want you to live long enough to come back. You know, I want that to perpetuate, and the next generation of diners, the kids, should learn that too. But so many of those terms are defined loosely, and they mean different things to different people, and even if you're certified, there's things that you're allowed to do that a lot of people don't know you're allowed to do, or vice versa, that you really need to have that conversation. You know, why are you growing those seeds? What did you pick this variety for? How are those chickens? What do they eat? is that good for them? Are they vegetarian fed? Well, should chickens eat bugs or not? Those are all things that the farmer can tell you, and you should ask them, because all vegetarian diet may not be the right thing for that particular animal. So sometimes, and what's vegetarian? Is it, do cucumber beetles count? Yeah. So those are, there's a lot of customer and consumer education side too that occurs when you talk to your farmer. There's stuff that you didn't know. And so I purposely write the menus to encourage people to ask questions. It's not always perfectly clear exactly what everything is. You should ask me what it is and why is it so good and what farm did it come from and how do I get that? Because I want to eat that again. And I can do it at home. And we're never going to work ourselves out of a job, you know, not having enough local food or not being able to, you know, we can have all the farm-to-table restaurants on every farm and we're still going to want more. So.
Great.
I totally didn't answer the question.
Ruth, you kind of alluded to this, but the Great Plains is really packed with large-scale ranching and farming, yet you really can't eat what is directly produced from those efforts. Corn and soybeans have to be processed. And can you tell us what it's like to live in the world's food basket, but the majority of people are not producing food that you can directly eat? Like, what is it like to function in this environment? And maybe we can change the regional pop process.
Bob has that the most.
Well, in our part of the state, you know, the average farm size is between 2,000 and 4,000 acres. All right, and these people are driven because of the way that society has drove them. You know, they receive money from the government for what they do, and now if they was to shut that door off and try to go raising and producing local food, they would feel broke because of the amount of money they've spent doing what they're doing. So I feel for them. Now, I was there when we started our endeavors to turn that around. It was frightening. It was real frightening. And I'm an outcast, I should say, because we're the only ones in either county that we produce in that actually does it the way we do it. You know, there's a lot of finger pointing, there's a lot of laughing and chuckling, but hey, you know, I enjoy it because, you know, we're doing something that they can't, or they're incapable of doing. So it's been very trying to switch over from the process that was being done from the 70s and 80s and in the 90s, when society, or I should say the government, was forcing these farmers to produce a commodity for their use. They're telling these people that they're producing food and they're feeding 227 people, and that's propaganda. They're not. These people are producing food. They are producing a commodity that's being used, and that's wrong. So it's hard for them to get outside of that box. It's hard for us to be next to that when we're talking about the size and the magnitude of what there is out there. It's almost scary, but once you've got there and you've earned some of the respect from them, they're starting to see that it does work. They're starting to see that a family member can come home and participate in this endeavor that they've been on for maybe three or four generations without investing another $1 million into another piece of ground and shoving that young farmer or that farmer off his place. They're able to do it in a smaller fashion with hoop houses, high tunnels, value-added products, and that sort of thing, and generate the income needed to bring that family member home. So it's there, the potential's there. We got to work real hard on educating them to get this to turn around. Thank you.
I think we're, because we're just 17 miles northwest of here, we don't have some of the same pressures. I hear horrible stories. Like some of our CSA members actually have ground southwest of Lincoln, and she converted her ground to organic. Some of the stuff that's happened, you know, high school classmates where she grew up won't speak to her. And I mean, really, you know, things that Bob has probably had to go through. So that stuff is happening because it's silently saying, kind of like, I know a better way, which is not really what you're trying. trying to do, and you learn not to say that. But they probably think, well, if that was a better way, I would have figured it out. And so that's a little bit of a tension. When we started, we were pretty cautious. One time, a little story, Everett on his truck, I think we had a CSA sticker, bumper sticker, community supported agriculture, maybe something about organic, and I was going to put like a biodynamic sticker. You'll have to look it up at biodynamics.com. I'm not going to go into it. Anyway, and I was going to put a biodynamic sticker on there. He's like, no way, no way. You can only have so many weirdnesses. It's just like not going to work at the feed co-op at all. So anyway, but I think people have seen us stick it out. There's mostly grass around us, but there's been more ground converted to row crops around us as the prices went up and now down. And so I think people have seen us stick it out. They've seen us outside when it's, you know, 110, they've seen us out there when it's minus 10, they've seen us, you know, bending over for all these years. And so in that regard, when they might have thought it was this crazy idea or whatever, but we've always tried to locally not put ourselves out there as we're better than you or we have a better way, and maybe because we're not row crops that worked because we weren't at all, you know, in competition. It was just like another, this other weird thing that we were doing. But I think there's tensions that are there. I think there's, when the drought was so bad a couple of years, what I was excited about when I started seeing guys that were conventional, they knew that they needed to plant. They were planting turnips. They were planting stuff that they, it's in their brain. They went back to doing stuff that they had to do, and they had the capability, and I was really excited about that. In some ways, the drought didn't last long enough to make us make some of these changes. And so, I mean, I don't say that lightly, but the capability is certainly there. The tensions are definitely there. And it's, but I think if we all proceed cautiously, and even in sustainable ag, people are coming to it for different reasons. I mean, I think there's, you know, there's different reasons we're all there. And I think if we started talking about certain things, we'd have a lot of conflicts too, not you. but so it's always there. But anyway,
I just add, as a young and beginning farmer, when we first moved to our farm, we're at Darby Springs Farm around Stresco, so not too far from Ruth and Everett. Our neighbor came over, and he runs corn and soybean, and he's a real nice guy. So he came over and said, "So you're into this alternative ag, huh?" And he goes to church with us, and again, really nice guy, and now it's sustainable agriculture. He buys chickens and eggs from us. He's contributed. We're doing a crowdfunding thing you can find out about there, and he's contributed to that, and he loves the ice cream that we're doing because we're putting an on-farm creamery on the store. And so I think he realized we're just as crazy as he is for farming, and so we farm differently, not the right way or the wrong way. Certainly we see our way, and he sees his way, but... So I think, I'll go back to that relationship and the culture. It's just a different way of looking at agriculture. And I know all of these guys have heard it, but one of the things I always say, one of my favorite shows is the Red Green Show. And I say, at the end of it, he says, we're all in this together. And it really is that. And so agriculture is that. It's a culture of that. So.
Can I say one more tiny thing? Sorry.
I'll just pass the microphone.
That's greedy. Sorry. When Bob said it, I guess I like to really make people think about, or hope you think about, that farmers, the conventional ones, sometimes if we're being oppositional in our speech, is they're oppressors sometimes, but they're the oppressed. Like in Food Inc., they came out so against it that they were they felt very angry and felt very threatened. And I never have understood why, because if you watched Food Inc., it's very clear in there that they are being oppressed completely. They're doing exactly what they're being asked to do. And for some reason, though, in turn, they feel threatened that there's this idea of something else. So I think when we make our food purchases, we need to think they're really on the hook. They put out, there's millions of dollars tied up in these huge amounts of land, and they are on the hook, and they're still putting seeds in the ground. True. Like everybody else. She wants it back. You guys going to have
like
to duke it out.
Sorry. One quick one here. You know, with today's farming... agriculture system the way it is, you as consumers, you pay for a large share of the premium cost of that industrialized farmer for his insurance premiums. If he has a falter, which he's going to have, the subsidies that go to him come from your tax dollars. Us as small producers do not have that. We do not have the insurance. We do not have the payments for our gardens. So your dollars are invested in our food, so to speak, to keep us going. Or would you rather invest your tax, your dollars to that conventional farmer to keep him going through subsidy?
Okay, you guys figure it out. That's what Katie wanted, dynamic.
Okay. No, I'm saying, I've seen a lot of row croppers moving into the local food. In fact, there's one now that is taking most of his cropland and putting it into local food production because he's already has a agreement with Hy-Vee. The Hy-Vee stores, the hospitals, the schools are all looking for local food. And with the falling prices of the row crops, he's seeing that he can make a little bit more money and also maybe really, he said to me, really maybe feeding people instead of my cattle, which does feed people. But he's changing his mindset too, saying because consumers are asking. I mean, Hy-Vee, the Walmarts, the Targets, the hospitals, the schools wouldn't be looking at local food if they didn't feel it was a better product to be serving.
Great. One of you touched on some of the younger, new farmers coming back and starting up farms. How are new farmers being attracted to the field, and are there places for them to farm? Like, how do new people get into this?
I also serve on the board of directors for the National Young Farmers Coalition, and they've done a number of research projects on bringing young and beginning farmers back into the fold. And so I think it's creative ways like Bob has done to bring his kids back, providing, giving them wherewithal to develop a project that they can make money off of, be successful in, raise a family in. And so I think that's one component, the mentorship and internship components. I know Doug Dittman's here, and they have a great intern program at Branch Oak Farm, and he'll have a booth in the back, and he can tell you about that. So I think there's ways like that. Again, I've mentioned I'm a young and beginning farmer. Our story was a little bit more rocky. We didn't have any of those opportunities with our family's farms. I'm from Ohio, and my wife's from South Central Nebraska. So we were really shooting from the hip, and we found a place that we liked. We called it Our Place on Earth, after the great Wendell Berry book. And it's in the saline wetlands of Saunders County. We tried to get funding because we're not rich. We didn't have access to land and access to capital, which are the biggest barriers for young and beginning farmers. And so we just persevered. We eventually found we were lumped into a loan program that wasn't agricultural related. The lenders and FSA, the Farm Service Agency, did not know what to do with our crazy plans of a pasture-based grass-fed dairy and poultry operation because it's so radical in its concept, I guess. And so I just think the creativity of young and beginning farmers' entrepreneurial spirit is what is going to lead the movement. They want to get their hands dirty. It is hard work. There's no sugarcoating that. I mean, look at Bob's hands. Those are laborers' hands for sure. So it is hard work. There's no sugarcoating that. The university has a great organic student program, and I see Matt here, and he can probably speak to you about that. So I think there should be more resources available at the university for young and beginning farmers within organic and sustainable agriculture and local foods. And I would like to see the university extension system take the lead on that. Fellow universities throughout the Midwest, Ohio State University, Iowa State University have programs. It's time for Nebraska to have that.
Well, I've kind of been thinking lately, you know, some are born farmers, some achieve farming, and some have farming thrust upon them. And, you know, I was not fortunate enough or unfortunate enough to be born here on a farm and get land. You have to come up with some way to make all of that work for you. And the banks thought we were insane too. They're not going to give us money to build a restaurant in the middle of nowhere. Nobody's going to go out there for that. And this local food thing, yeah, that's great. And let us know when you open. I'll bring my wife, but we're not giving you any money. So, you know, we did it anyway, our way, with less of their money and more of our effort. But there, because the traditional and sort of, you want to draw the analogy, the conventional ways to do things like that, to get people to back to the farms or back to rural, aren't really working well, because you go to try to get money to buy land and they don't want to give that to you. You don't have any experience. You don't have any history. You don't have a lot of money to start with to go into farming. So there's got to be some creative ways to do that, like what the Dittmans are doing, or something like one row of each of the plots. We're letting, you know, an intern or a student use that. They have a corner at the farmer's market. They sell it and get to learn their relationship from the stand that already exists. So they've got some of the structure built up, so they get somewhere to start. Because you got to begin somewhere. Everybody begins with a paper route or something. You got to have an initial place. And getting good land, and then, okay, you have this land, but you don't have water. You don't have any of the equipment you need. You've got to buy seeds, all that stuff. You know, it's like moving out into the apartment the first time. You don't realize you don't have a knife and a pan and a bed until you don't. You know, you don't know what you need for the farm until you have it. Oh, well, I got to get this to there, and I've got to package it, and I have to wash it and weigh it, and they won't let me just use a scale. I've got to use this expensive scale. You know, all that stuff comes, you've got to get it somewhere. And so some of the great, and we're beginning a new young farmers, and I don't think I'm all that young, but we count that way. And these guys have been doing it a lot longer, and we still ask them stuff, and there's still things we don't know. All the conferences you go to or you sit here and you learn about, you know, to sell your $5 of tomatoes, you know, just the infrastructure of your farmer's market fees and your stand and your scale is $1,000 at least for your $5 of tomatoes. That's, you know, there's a lot of that that the new farmer cannot overcome without some help and assistance and the boost from people who know what they're doing. To tell you, yeah, you really got to buy that scale. They won't let you do it, and they'll close you down if you have just your scale or any of the many things that apply that way. But there's some creative ways, and the university really should be helping some of those creative, out-of-the-box thinking ways to get people a foothold in it so you can move forward.
The university is starting to address some of these issues. Extension, we've had a lot of meetings about how to address these, and hopefully we will get some of these resolved across the state. But also the senators, Senator Kowalski and Senator Haar have a resolution coming up to really try to help the small family farmers, you know, find land, you know, and all the needs that go along with being a young farmer. So there are organizations out there, like Farmers Union, different organizations that we're working together, pulling together to really have this happening. I hear from acreage owners that say, you know, I bought this acreage, I thought I was going to, you know, farm it, but all I'm doing is mowing it. Do you know any young farmer that might be interested in coming out and using my land in trade for some of their great food? So as a community, we have to work together to make this. It's not just one organization, not just one farmer, not just one restaurant, but all of us pulling together to help bring the young farmers back to the land. No matter if your community's small or large, it can be done if we all work together.
I would add, so the USDA has the Beginning Farmer Rancher Development Program. Unfortunately, they consider a beginning farmer 36 years and under. So not to date, Renee.
Well, it depends on your, whether it's USDA, whether it's
right.
Who's young beginning farmer.
Yeah, so they're working on trying to classify that, because we do have a lot of beginning farmers retiring, second jobs. My mother is 65 and wants to do that, but she wouldn't qualify for any of those programs, which are loan programs, access to grant opportunities, things like that. And so there's options, but they need to reclassify that. And I know they're working on that.
Education. I think it's up to us as producers, farmers, and ranchers that have been there and experienced it to educate the young. In our cheese facility, we put visual access windows there so we can do tours. We do homeschool tours. We do FFA, wide classroom tours, so they can come in and see what we do and how we do it. We're building a meat processing plant with visual access windows so we can educate these young students on how you know, to properly do what needs to be done, build their interest, educate them in doing what needs to be done. I myself am pushing to get into the FFA and the WAG classes in outstate Nebraska. So when we've got a father with two or three sons, and he will basically say the one son can come home because it takes another $1 million to bring home another one. No, we're showing them that they can take a pivot corner of 3 acres, put a hoop house up, and generate $20,000 worth of income from it or more. You know, so this is what we're trying to do, is to educate.
Well, before I open it up to some audience questions, I just wanted to let you have the opportunity to share any other comments about the local food movement that you wanted to, any comments about what you guys are doing, either at your farms or restaurants, just to let you have a little soapbox there.
Let's just start.
All right, well, I think I covered everything. So our farms, Darby Springs Farms, Resco, I mentioned that. We're doing a crowdfunding thing called Barn Raiser, which is for local, sustainable, organic, entrepreneurial ideas. You can find my wife in the back. We'll have samples of a homemade caramel sauce made with milk from our grass-fed dairy cows and apples. We're doing a Barn Raiser celebration at Plowshare Brewing right after this. It's Lincoln's newest brewery. He's really into sustainable local sourcing for his restaurant. So you can find out all about that. One of our other big events we're doing, we put on our annual conference. It's in Omaha this year. We have several dynamic keynote speakers, and there's a sheet around here that's got one of them on there. And then one of our other ones is Growing Cities, which is a urban agricultural film. And then we're going to have Wayne Pacelli from the Humane Society of the United States talk about animal welfare issues, which is another component in all of this. And so then we have breakout sessions, things like that. And then we're doing a Producer's Choice Chef Award event. You can find all this information in the back. But essentially, it's an Iron Chef competition with local food chefs. We have a chef from Hastings, Lincoln, and then three from Omaha. And we pair them with farmers, and it's a lot of fun, and it's a fundraiser. So,
I'm with Buy Fresh by Local Nebraska, and ours is an education, outreach, and marketing program where we help our small family farmers find direct marketing opportunities that fit their production, whether that be at farmers markets, developing a CSA, selling wholesale, working with chefs, with institutions. Like the University of Nebraska has a good, fresh, local program. I don't know how many of you ever attended that, but I try not to miss a meal. It's really great, where they source from local farmers, and it's they do a spectacular job, and it's open to the public. You know, so there's a, as part of that, we also work with the consumer. We have a food guide that we put out, and they're out there, so that people know where they can source local food. It's not as hard as some people think it is. You know, it's just like Bob said, education, and outreach. So we are also having a dinner this Sunday at Prairie Plate that we still have, I think, 5 spaces left. So if you're interested in coming out and hearing more about local food and what's happening across the state, Senator Kolaski will be speaking about his resolutions and what the legislature is doing to help local farmers. And so if you have any questions, I'll be out there, and you can visit then, too. Oh, I forgot something. There's also, I'm sorry, there's also people working on food hubs. And I know one of the really pushers and shakers is here tonight, too, and maybe later can visit about the food hub idea, where we will be able to, because that's a really hard thing for a lot of farmers, is that there's not a place to aggregate and distribute the food across the state in a good, reliable manner. And this is one of the things that we want to address.
So we have Prairie Plate Restaurant, which by now you probably figured out, it's a farm-to-table restaurant on our farm. We grow most of the produce, but I get things from other places. There's things we don't do, or some people that grow things that are interesting or are not in our system, so I source from others as well. Just a couple points is that this is great that there are so many consumers that are interested in it. the more you demand, the more you ask, the more you want to know, where did this come from? What is that? Why do I have it? Where can I get it? And ask the question and get the answer and see if you like it, wherever you are. Your kids at school, are they eating something you want them to eat? Are they not? You know, there's farm to school program. There's all sorts of things that are happening. And there's so many of them that's kind of dizzying when you try to think about all of them. But you, as the consumers, have the power on the other side of the plate. You're the ones that get to decide what you eat. And so you decide where it comes from, and you decide where you want to spend your money. And once it is viable for a young farmer, a small-scale farm, to support their family on it, then we'll have more return to that. Once you can show the college kid that graduated the degree that it is worth their time, trouble, and effort, they can support themselves on doing that, then they'll do that. That's how it'll work. And this is who controls that process.
I don't really know what to say. I guess we have a table out there. I boiled eggs with a little bag. I don't want you to eat in here because it'll be messy, but you can take your little boiled egg home and make a bag. And some carrots that Everett dug, my husband, this morning. Anyway, Common Good Farm, we're just about 17 miles northwest of here, certified organic, certified biodynamic. We have eggs and veg and the oldest, longest running CSA in Nebraska. And what else? We sell at Open Harvest and Old Cheney Market. And we have a little bit of pork and beef. And when they used to say the average age of a farmer was back then 55 when we started. I think now it's 57. I'm like, that's a long way off. I'm not even close. And now I'm getting really close, and it's freaking me out. But yeah, and I'm getting there closer than the average age is moving up. So anyway. Okay, what else was I going to say? I think, another little story. It usually is something that I think of with this kind of propaganda. Bob was saying, like, you know, feeding America and all this stuff. But I was at a market this summer, and a dad told his daughter, I'll probably get teary. A dad told his daughter to thank me because I was feeding America. And I don't know, the way he said it was really nice.
Well, Robert Burnt, my wife Christine is out in the corridor there. We're sampling out, I think, 10 different varieties of our cheeses. We're actually sampling out some of our ice cream a day and a few other things. I'm not sure what they are. you know, when I look at these pictures, you know, and I live in the sand hills of Nebraska. I've got a booming ground where these grouse boom on my property. And it's a site that if I died tomorrow, that would be one of the reasons I wouldn't want to, because I live for the spring when I can see that. You know, and it to be here, to be invited, I really, really appreciate it. I mean, I admire what you've done. I respect what you're doing. I think you're helping us out and the people here on this for doing what you're doing. But back to the gist of it, we have 700 acres of farm and ranch land where we produce a variety of beef. We've got Scottish Highlanders. We've got roughly 60 head of Jersey dairy cows, strictly grass-fed, that we produce our dairy products from, building on-farm cheese processing, butter ice cream processing facility, building the meat processing so we can get a better quality of meat. I think we have to find the niche to retake that market that we've lost, to get the best value in our products, the freshness of them, you know, the quality of the taste there. We have to work at these things as producers to get you to come back and put your dollar out there on the table that I know we all very much appreciate you doing, to purchase our products for that reason. And we got to give you the best possible product that we can produce in order to have that. And that's what we're trying to attempt with our processing plants right there on the farm. You know, we're living in a society today that's really driving us in a neat direction. As I said when we started, this group would have probably been just a fraction of this size 10 years ago. And today it's full. You know, I've spoke at two other things here in the last month, and the rooms were full. It's really amazing to see what's happening out there with the people and what they're wanting. Is there room for expansion? Yes. These farmers, these young farmers, can come back to their farms. They can produce the food that you need, that you want. Is it feasible? Absolutely. We get into arguments all the time. If we go back 50 years and start producing food, the people will starve to death. No. If we produce nutrient-dense foods, you're going to eat less, consume less, and be more satisfied and healthier. So that's the perspective on the argument. Can we produce foods the way we do and feed the world? Absolutely. It can be done, and we'll be healthier because of it. Thank you.
All right, I'm going to open it up to questions now. This is really good. Lots of them. Yeah, I'll start right here. And I'm just going to do this.
Can you address the issue of prices for consumers? I don't know if it's a misconception, but I hear people say, oh, I buy local, but it's just cheaper for me to go to Walmart.
Okay. We have this discussion about once a week, just internally, amongst ourselves, our staff at the restaurant and the farm. One of the easier examples, tomatoes or eggs. Yes, you can go somewhere and buy, say, a tomato at Walmart in February, and it will cost you something, and you probably cannot go buy a tomato at a farm in February. In August, you can also go do that, and it may be cheaper there, but everybody, no matter who they are, knows. I mean, everyone in this room will know that it tastes better in August when you buy it from a farm, or you grew it in your backyard, or have a pot in your deck in your apartment, whatever it is. So when you say expensive, there's a lot of ways you can go with that. You can say expensive in money, expensive in health, expensive to the environment. What's cheap and what's expensive? People look at it just the dollars out of their pocket at that moment. But you're paying yourself backwards because you may not be helping yourself in oh so many ways. There's all, you know, eggs is another one of those where once, you know, once you've flown first class and had her eggs, you can't go back. Because then your kids will look at it and go, they're not yellow. What is this scrambled eggs? These are not the eggs that we should have, because they can tell. It tastes different. It rises differently. They bake differently. They look different. They make the most beautiful pasta dough, or the, you know, the scrambled eggs, or cake frosting that's actually yellow if you use the egg yolks to make the buttercream. It probably costs you less in your dollars at that moment, but that doesn't mean it's costing you less. And you can eat less if you eat better food, and you'll be happier.
Those eggs are super orange. They're amazing.
Also, what the price? When you buy a local from a farmer at a farmer's market through a CSA, you're getting fresh food, and it's going to last longer. I don't know. I've done comparison where I bought lettuce, you know, in the grocery store that was, you know, fresh lettuce, and the same day at a farmer's market. And that lettuce, when I opened it up from the store and used it once, the next day it wasn't edible. But the lettuce that I bought at the farmer's market, I had it for 2 weeks, and it was great tasting, still full of nutrition. Also, that price is when you're supporting a local farmer. I mean, it's you know, supporting your community. In 2009, we did a study to see how many occupied homes there were in the state of Nebraska. And we figured that if every occupied dwelling would spend $10 a week on local food, that would keep over $411 million in this state. That's a pretty good number, you know? I think buying local is well worth the price for my health and for the environment, and because I enjoy seeing these small farms as I drive down the highway. You know, I like the pastoral scenes.
Thank you. My name is Cecil Stewart. I'm founder and president of the Jocelyn Institute for Sustainable Communities. Baleen mentioned a food hub a moment ago, and I wanted to inform you folks of a current study that we are in charge of. Thanks to the support of a major statewide financial institution who believes that Nebraska has fantastic and unmet opportunities in local food production, local food marketing. It seems, early investigation, that there's a strong disconnect between producers, markets, financial support, and overall organization to support this developing industry. A part of our study focuses on Lincoln, and an idea that Pershing Auditorium, A, should be saved, and B, it could be a 12-month local food market. We are working on concepts and ideas for that. There's a meeting scheduled on December the 16th at Mahoney State Park, which is an attempt to bring Omaha interests in markets and production and Lincoln interests in market and production together. So you can find us if you Google the Joslin Institute, and if you want to log your interest in being at that meeting, we'd love to have you. The consumer is going to drive this, as has already been said, and we need strong consumer support, and we need strong producers, bodies and information, and we need strong available markets of a wide variety. William, I'd like to expand your definition of sustainability. Please add technologies and public policy to environment, economics, and social cultural. Every sustainable question needs to account for the public policies and the technologies that we use and make. Thank you.
So my question to you is, why the organic food expensive? The one is just organic fertilizer do not yield. Like a not like a chemical fertilizer, they put nitrate in, they put ammonia in, then they feed the crop and the crop grow faster, so it's a yield. But the organic food is just long, like a they are kind of long, like a not accurate, feed the crop. So that's what they kind of a slow. Feeding the crop doesn't yield. Another thing is, somebody said, the organic food has to go to certify. So when you certify, you have to pay money, like a Whole Food, Whole Food store as well, Trader Joe. Why cost? Even your food, Open Harvest, your egg is $5, the other is $2 and $3. So yours may be certified. So you pay for the government or whoever that fee. So it's ad hoc. So that's what, the poor people looks like they still go to the conventional store. The rich people can take care of their health, go to organic store. So in that way, the division is that the poor people cannot afford to eat healthy food and the rich people can afford. So I guess the question if we can answer.
That's been one of the things that has bothered myself and my wife, with our 12 children. We've been there, we've done that. First of all, to answer your question on the fertilizer, I was in a certified organic field of corn that's going to yield over 240 bushels to the acre with no fertilizer. I produce corn, and this year it's going to yield somewhere between 140 and 150 bushels to the acre with milk as a fertilizer, and it's growing a product that's very nutrient dense to satisfy the needs of whatever I feed that to. So we're capable of producing that product at actually less of a cost than what the conventional consumer is. And now you got to remember, we're not subsidized. We're not protected with the crop insurance that's paid for, 7% of that premium is paid for by you guys. We're not there. We're taking care of that ourselves. As far as being able to afford the we've got 12 children, as I've said several times. In 7 years, we have not seen one doctor. Can I put a value on what a doctor's appointment or a hospital bill would be compared to eating healthy? I think with those children, in those 12 years, there's no doubt we could have seen one, two per child, normal situations with runny noses, earaches, whatever, and that would have dollared up substantially. The average family of four in the United States 4 years ago was spending $16,000 a year on health care. We spent nothing. So if we can accredit eating healthy food, which I'm sure is the reason for that, then how expensive is your food? How expensive is that organic egg? And actually today, you see less volatility in the organic market than you do in the conventional market. You know, my ground beef prices are actually less than the conventional ground beef market today because of the drive that's out there and the need and desire by these producers to grab on to every dollar they can. I'm still priced to where I was 5 years ago.
I think the price supports and the subsidies are huge. I think there's some of my costs, like for our eggs, inherently the feed that we, our certified organic feed that we buy in, I mean, Bob can grow all his, but we have such a small piece that we buy in our grains. So those are at a much higher price than what conventional feed is. So again, you're paying for nutrient-dense food, you're paying for presumably way better health, better taste. Say the 250, I love what Open Harvest does, but the bulk eggs or at a store like that, presumably it's conventional feed with GMO ingredients. So that's what it is. There's a huge difference right there, and then the cost that they have. And then there's other practices with organic. We're required to leave ground fallow as part of the rotation. So you have some of the production, it's set, you know, you're putting cover crops on and things like that. And for us, it's a single family livelihood. So that's all we are doing. And we're creating our whole entire livelihood without government subsidies. So that's a big part of it, I guess.
I think the yield question, when you're talking about row crops, organic versus conventional, is a different question than when you're talking about the things that we do. And it's our third year growing, so we're just getting to the plot that was in, we have a 3-year rotation on our land, and we're just getting to the one that's been in cover crops for 2 years. And yeah, we've learned a lot of stuff about how to plant and what to grow and which varieties, but man, everything we planted this year is so much better than the first year. And the yield and the quality of it, and the amount that isn't waste because you can't possibly sell that lettuce leaf isn't good enough, that kind of thing. It's, if you take care of your ground, it will take care of you. And you take care of it not necessarily by putting fertilizers in the quick fix, it's the long-term program. And every organic producer will tell you that. You know, you've got to take care of amending the soil in a different way than what we're used to seeing with the ammonia sprayers and stuff. And I refuse to believe that good food is elitist. Anybody can grow it in their backyard, anybody can buy it, and even if you buy less of it and pay more for it, and learn a little bit about how to treat it, then you can come out so much better in the end for all the reasons that we've all said, for the environment, for yourself, for your health, for your, but it's really hard to look at it and say, well, right now I have $5 and I can either get one dozen eggs or I can get this and something else. And it's really hard to think that way and realize the long-term impact of that on you and everything around you. We're very focused on the here and now as a culture. That's just how it's been.